Reason didn't have much effect on my spiking heartbeat and the shaft of terror that was my body's reaction to being startled by a strange man in my garage. I'd been assaulted a while ago. Just when I thought I was over it, some stupid little thing would bring it back. I nodded stiffly at him, then visibly focused on the job ahead, no matter where my panicky attention really was. I kept talking to the bolt, finding the soothing tones surprisingly useful even if they were my own. I fought to regain control by the time the bolt came out. Every twist, I told myself, meant I had to calm a little more. To my relief, the silly exercise worked. 6 twists of the wrench, and I was no longer on the verge of shaking, tears, and more rare, but what it lacked in frequency it made up for in humiliation, throwing up on a perfect stranger. I set the wrench down and turned with a smile to face him. He had stayed right where he had been, at a polite and safe distance. He didn't look directly at me either. He was a werewolf. He'd know that I had panicked, but he'd allowed me to save face. Points to him for courtesy. He was neither tall nor short for a man, and carried himself pulled tightly toward his core, arms in, shoulders in, head tipped down. His hair was curly and pulled back in a short ponytail. He looked as though he could use a good meal and a pat on the head.
"I'm looking for a place to be," he said.
He had a backpack slung over one shoulder that looked as old as the beetle I was repairing. Maybe it was. Several years ago, another werewolf had approached me at the garage, looking for a place to be. He was dead. I nodded at this new wolf to show him that I heard him and that I was not rejecting his almost request. But between panic attack and memory, words were beyond me at the moment.
"I called the home number of the local alpha."
He'd given me time to talk, and sounded a little stressed when he had to break the silence.
"The girl that answered sent me here when I told her I didn't have easy means of transport out that far. The city bus got me over here."
He glanced over his shoulder, as if he'd rather have been anywhere else. It dawned on me that the reason he wasn't looking me in the face had more to do with him than with my almost panic attack.
"I drift, you know. Don't like to stay anywhere long. I'm bottom of the pack, so that means I don't cause no trouble."
His American accent was Pacific Northwest, but there was something about the rhythm of his words that made me think that English was not his native tongue, though he was comfortable in it. Bottom of the pack, like his averted eyes, meant submissive wolf. They tended to live longer than other werewolves because they weren't so likely to end up on the losing end of a fight to the death. Submissive wolves also got to travel because no alpha would turn down a submissive wolf. There weren't many of them, and they tended to help a pack function more smoothly. Honey's mate Peter, who had been killed a few months ago, had been our only submissive after Abel Tankersley left. A wolf I'd only been barely acquainted with, Abel had taken a job offer in San Francisco. It was not only the violence of Peter's death, but his absence that was affecting the pack. A new submissive wolf would be welcome. "Bran send you to us?" I asked.
"Hell no," he said with emphasis, though he gave me a list of numbers when I told him I was drifting this way. Neither of us knew I would end up here at the time.
He looked out the garage door again at the bare beginnings of spring.
"Don't think I'll stay here long, though. Hope you don't take it amiss. I don't generally stay where it's hot. And I heard tell at the bus depot that this place gets scorching in the summer."
"That's fine. Do you need a place to stay?" He gave my garage a dubious look, and I laughed.
"I don't know how much you know. I'm Mercy Hauptman, and my husband's the alpha here. We have extra bedrooms at home that are open to pack members who need them."
Maybe with another visitor, the effects of Christie's stay would be diluted.
"I'm Zach Drummond, Miss Hauptman. I'd be grateful for a room tonight, but after that, I'd rather find my own place."
"All right," I said. "I'm headed out there at 5:30. Usually it was closer to 6:30, but usually my husband's ex wouldn't have been running around in my territory that used to be hers. If you want to catch a ride. I can't officially welcome you to the pack. That's my husband's job. But we don't have a submissive in our pack, and we could use one."
"If I can't find another way out," he said, I'll be here at 5:15.
He hesitated, started to say something, then hesitated again. What is it? I asked.
What are you? He said. You aren't Fey or werewolf.
I'm a shifter, Native American style, I told him, better known as a walker. I change into a coyote. His eyes widened and finally rose to examine every inch of me.
I've heard of your kind, he said finally. Always thought they were a myth.
I smiled at him and gave him a salute. A few years ago, and that would have been the pot calling the kettle black, Mr. Drummond. Zach Drummond didn't show up at 5:15. 5:30 saw me fretting because the beetle wasn't done, and I'd promised it would be finished at 8 the next morning.
Go home, Mercy, said Tad, who was on his back, working on the undercarriage of the beetle. Another hour and I'll have it buttoned up and done.
If I stayed, it would shave 15 minutes off, I told him. One of his booted feet waggled at me.
Go home. Don't let that bitch steal your man without a fight.
You don't even know her. He slid back out from under the car, his face more oil-colored than not. Ears sticking out a little, his face just this side of homely, by his choice. His father was Seabolt Adalbert Smiter. Tad's mother had been human, but his father's blood had gifted him with glamour and, from things he'd said, a fair bit of power.
I know you, he told me. I'm betting on you. Go home, Mercy. I'll get it done.
He'd been working in this shop when he was just a kid. He might be 13 years younger than me, but he was at least as good a mechanic. Okay, I said. In the oversized bathroom, I stripped out of my overalls and scrubbed up. The harsh soaps that cut through the grease and dirt have never bothered my skin, which is good because I use them a lot. Not even industrial soap could get out all the ingrained dirt I had on my hands, but my skin tones hid most of that. A glance in the mirror had me unbraiding my hair. I ran a comb through it. Braiding it when it was wet gave it a curl it didn't have normally. Nothing was going to turn me into a girly girl, but the curls softened my appearance a little. I was almost out the door, and Tad was back under the beetle when he said,
When Adam's ex drives you into making sweet things with chocolate, just remember I like my brownies with lots of frosting, but no nuts.
I opened the front door to the smell of bacon and the sound of sizzling meat. Adam, Jesse, and I shared kitchen duties, taking turns making dinner. Tonight was supposed to be Jesse's night, but I wasn't surprised that the only person in the kitchen was Christy. Her back was to me as she cooked in the kitchen she'd designed. She'd been angry, her daughter had told me, that Adam had insisted on moving all the way out to Findlay instead of building in one of the more prestigious neighborhoods in West Richland or Kennewick. He'd given her free rein in the house to make up for the fact that he'd wanted the house next to my trailer because Bran, who ruled all the Weirs in this part of the world, had told him to keep an eye on me. In addition to ruling hundreds and maybe thousands of werewolves, Bran had been the alpha of the pack my foster father Brian had belonged to. That had occasionally left Bran with delusions that he had a right to interfere with my life long after I'd left Montana and his pack behind. Christy was shorter than me by a couple of inches, about the same size as Jesse. The body in the blouse and peasant skirt was softly curved, but not fat. Her hair, brown when I'd last seen her, was now blonde-streaked and French-braided in a thick rope that hung to her hips. "Could you find some paper towels, Jessie?" she asked without turning around. "They've been moved, and I have bacon ready to come out of the frying pan." I opened the cabinet that held the paper towels exactly where she probably had put them on the day she first moved in. I hadn't changed the organization of the kitchen. Too many people were already using it, so it made more sense for me to learn where everything was than for me to reorganize it to my tastes. So Christy's kitchen was exactly as she'd left it, still hers in spirit, if not in truth. Her presence in my kitchen felt like an invasion in a fashion that the Grey Lord who'd been here in the wee hours of the night had not, despite his intentions. Christy knew I wasn't Jesse. I could smell her tension, which was sort of cheating, so I didn't call her on it. Also, accusing her of lying right off the bat didn't seem like a good way to make peace with her. "Paper towels," I said as peaceably as I could manage, setting them down on the counter beside the stove. She turned to look at me, and I saw her face. "Holy Hannah," I said before she could say anything, distracted entirely from my territorial irritation. "Tell me you shot him or hit him with a 2x4. She didn't just have a shiner. Half her face was black, with that greenish brown around the edges that told you it hadn't happened in the last 24 hours. She gave me a half smile, probably the half that didn't hurt. "Would a frying pan be okay? Not as effective as a baseball bat, but it was hot." "I would accept a frying pan," I agreed. "This," I indicated the side of my face that corresponded to her damaged cheek with my fingers, "from the guy you're running from?" "It wasn't my Aunt Sally," she said tartly. "You go to a doctor with that?" I asked. She nodded. "Adam made me go. The doctor said it would heal okay. He gave me a prescription for pain meds, but I don't like to take prescriptions. Maybe tonight if I can't sleep." The front door opened, and I didn't have to back out of the kitchen to see who it was. Adam had a presence I could feel from anywhere in the house. "Hey, honey," said Christy. "I've got BLTs going on the stove. They'll be done in about 10 minutes if you want to go upstairs and get cleaned up." She glanced at me and said, "Oops, sorry, just habit." "No worries," I said pleasantly, as if she hadn't bothered me at all when she'd called my husband by an endearment, then could have shot myself because I saw the satisfaction in her face. My reaction had been too controlled to be real, and she'd caught it. "Maybe you could set the table?" she asked lightly, as if it was still her kitchen, her house to rule. "I need to get out of these clothes," I said. "You should ask Jessie to set the table since you took over her job tonight. We might have one more for dinner, a new wolf in town." I left before she could reply and rounded the corner for the stairs to see Adam. He walked with me up the stairs. "Any luck hunting down the guy who hit her?" I asked, stripping off my clothes once we were in our bedroom. Even though my overalls absorbed most of the mess of mechanicking, the clothes I wore under them reeked of oil and sweat.
"No, it's not that we can't find people named Juan Flores. It's that there are too many Juan Floreses," he told me. "John Smith would be easier, though it helps that he doesn't look like most Juan Floreses. He's around 6 feet tall with blonde hair. She said his English was good. He has an accent, but she doesn't think it was Mexican or Spanish, despite his name."
"She met him in Eugene?" He shook his head.
"Reno. She was out partying with some friends. He was a friend of a friend. Rich with cash, not just credit cards. He talked about Europe like he was very familiar with it, but he didn't tell her if he was living there or if he just traveled there a lot."
"Cash means real money," I said, "not just someone pretending to be wealthy."
"Probably,"
Adam agreed. "Did she call the police when he hit her?"
"She called him before he broke into her apartment and started hitting her. He left when he heard the sirens, though it might have been the frying pan she hit him with."
There was admiration in his voice, and I did my best not to flinch. Of course he was proud of her. It takes guts to fight back effectively after a hard hit to the head.
"The police didn't have any better luck than I'm having running the name he gave her."
Adam stripped off his tie and unbuttoned the cuffs of his dress shirt impatiently.
"Later that night, someone mugged the man she went out with after she returned to Eugene, broke his neck, and took off with his wallet. She's sure it was Flores, that stealing his wallet was just a cover. The police are undecided, but told her that she might find somewhere else to be while they ran down leads."
"If her boyfriend is responsible, he kills pretty competently," I said, pulling on clean jeans, which were in a drawer with a stack of other clean jeans. I'd gotten used to keeping my clean clothes folded in drawers and dirty clothes in a hamper in the closet. Adam had gotten used to calling me when he was going to be late from work. I had learned that it was those things, compromise in the form of phone calls and folded clothes, that cemented the bedrock of a relationship. I wondered what habits Adam and Christy had left over from their marriage.
"I thought so, too,"
Adam said, unaware of the twist of my thoughts.
"My sources say that the kill was clean. Not so clean it couldn't have been an accident, but unusual in a mugging, especially in Eugene, which isn't exactly a hotbed of that kind of crime. So maybe he spent some time in the military.
Or as an assassin or crime lord, I said. Adam snorted as he pulled on a faded green T-shirt that said, I heart coyotes. Yet another sign that folding my clean clothes wasn't too big a price to pay to make him happy. He didn't have any I Heart Christie shirts, or I would have burned them already.
You have an overactive imagination,
says the werewolf, I told him. Instead of my usual after-work T-shirt, I changed into a fitted shirt in a shade of lavender that looked good against my skin and showed off the muscles on my arms. Christie wouldn't know that it was any different from what I usually wore. I didn't have her soft curves, so I'd emphasize what I did have. You got my text about Zach Drummond, right? The lavender contrasted nicely with my brown eyes. Maybe I should put on eyeshadow. Seems like a nice guy. Thought walkers like me were a myth. Adam grinned at me.
I think you're pretty special, too.
I kissed his cheek and rested in his arms for a moment before I broke away to find socks and shoes. No eyeshadow. Christie wouldn't know I didn't wear makeup unless we were going out, but everyone else would. I usually went barefoot in the house, too, but with Christie in the kitchen, bare feet felt too vulnerable.
Warren's coming over tonight to grill Christie about her stalker and see if he can learn anything useful.
Good, I said. Cool. Warren had been working as a private detective for a while. He was smart about people, and he'd gotten good at finding secrets. But that wasn't why I was pleased. Warren was my friend, and Christie didn't like him. That left dinner tonight stacked in my favor. Not that I really thought I needed the advantage. We went downstairs just as a knock sounded on the door. Christie dodged past us and said over her shoulder, I invited Mary Jo to join us for dinner. I decided that I was going to have to get rid of the chip on my shoulder or the next week or so was going to be unbearable. Christie cooked dinner. She was welcome to invite anyone to dinner, especially one of the wolves who had a standing invitation to the office table at any time anyway. Mary Jo was Christie's friend. Christie was acting as though my house were still hers. It wasn't. But as long as she kept her actions to those acceptable in any guest, there wasn't a lot I could do to fix it without appearing to be jealous, insecure, and petty. So I'd swallow my first reactions and deal until it was time to set her straight. When Christie answered the door and let her in, Mary Jo hummed in sympathy at the nasty bruise.
You need to have that looked at.
Nothing broken, Christie told her. Just bruised, and it will fade in time. Adam made me go to a doctor. A good thing, too, because Mercy was about to take me to the doctor herself. An exaggeration. Maybe. Mary Jo apparently thought so, too, because she gave me a cool look.
It looks like it hurts.
Christie touched her cheek, then shook her head. It could have been worse. A man I dated a couple of times turned up dead, and I'm pretty sure Juan is responsible.
Ah, oh, geez, Mary Jo said. I'm so sorry.
Warren came in. He didn't knock, and thus avoided the chance that Christie would answer the door again, so she could make everyone think either that I was using her to do all the menial tasks, or make me think she was trying to reclaim her home, or both at once. Probably she was just doing normal things, and I was being paranoid and jealous. Yes, I was going to have to work on my attitude. Adam kissed the top of my head. Let's all move to the dining room, Christie said. I put dinner out there. Is your new wolf coming, Mercy? If we wait much longer, dinner might get cold. I shook my head. I don't know. Maybe something came up. Let's eat without him, then, she said. If he comes later, he can have leftovers if there are any, or I can make him a sandwich. There was room at the kitchen table to eat there, but the dining room table had been set with a tablecloth and good china and all. I wondered if Jesse had said it, or if Christie had done so while Adam and I were up changing. The only time I used the dining room table was on Sunday breakfasts or holidays when everyone didn't fit in the kitchen. I sat down on Adam's right, and Christie took the seat to his left before Jesse could sit in it. Jesse smiled apologetically at me and took the next seat over. All right, everyone, Christie said as soon as everyone was seated. Dig in. The sandwiches were all cut into triangles and set on a plate in the center of the table. A gloriously beautiful presentation with bacon cooked exactly right, red tomatoes, and bright crispy lettuce on golden toast. A huge cut glass bowl held a salad and sat next to a plate with homemade croutons. Cloth napkins were folded just so, and there was a vase with the first of the spring lilies from the front flower bed. The whole table looked as though Martha Stewart and Gordon Ramsay had both come to my home to prepare a casual meal for a few friends. Mary Jo took a bite of the sandwich and all but purred.
I haven't had a BLT this good since that picnic you had out here that 4th of July, do you remember? You made BLTs and carrot cake. I have missed this.
That started a conversation about the better old days that eventually spread to include Adam and even Warren. Jesse met my eyes and grimaced in sympathy. I didn't know if Christy was taking over my home on purpose or by accident, but I had my suspicions. I knew what I would do if someone else had Adam. I might use my fangs or a gun instead of a BLT dinner, but Christy's weapons were different from mine. I did know that the only way to take control back was to be a witch, and that was just another way of losing.
"Do you like your sandwich?"
Christy asked me as the good old days talk started to wind down. "It is very good," I said. "Thank you for making dinner." Mary Jo gave me a look.
I'd have thought that just having flown in and being hurt, someone else could have cooked tonight, Christy.
That was my job, said Jessie. But Mom said I told her that I wanted to make her favorite dinner because I don't get much chance to see her.
Christy looked up. Her blue eyes, Jessie's eyes, swam with tears that she bravely held back.
I know that's my fault. I'm not a good mother.
She wasn't lying. She believed everything that she said. I had to give her credit for accepting the responsibility for what she put Jesse through. But the thing was, she was looking at Adam when she said it. Then she looked around the table. She didn't look at Jesse. This wasn't an apology. It was a play for sympathy. I wasn't the only one who noticed. Jesse put her fork down carefully.
Thank you for dinner, Mom. It was good. I just am not feeling well tonight. I'm going to head up and do some homework.
She picked up her plate and carried it into the kitchen and left us in silence. If I said anything, I worried she'd make Jessie's leaving or her bad parenting my fault, so I kept my mouth shut. I don't know why no one else said anything.
You see, said Christy huskily as soon as Jessie was out of human earshot, I don't know why I said that. I knew it would upset her. She doesn't want to hurt my feelings, but she can't lie either.
I'd lived through Christy's drama for a while now.
Sorry, Jessie, I know I was supposed to pick you up or you were supposed to fly down, but it just isn't convenient right now,
with reasons that varied from new boyfriends to trips to Rio. Work trips, really. I knew that she was good at manipulating people. And still, the expression on her bruised face made me feel bad for her.
It's all right. Mary Jo told her. You'll have time now to fix things between you.
And abruptly all my sympathy died away, washed away by dismay. Just how long was Christy planning to stay?
I don't know,
Christy murmured sadly, her fork playing with the remnants of her salad.
I'd like to think so.
Adam patted her on the shoulder. I ate with steady determination that was not helped at all by the fact that the food was good. I could cook anything that went into the oven as long as it had sugar and chocolate in it. Beyond that, I was a pretty indifferent cook. Adam was a lot better than I, but his ex-wife was practically a gourmet chef. She'd made the mayonnaise on the BLTs from scratch.
So, Warren said, putting his silverware on his empty plate, if you are through eating, I've got some questions about this ex-boyfriend of yours.
She's hurt and tired, said Mary Jo. Can't questions wait until she's had a chance to recover?
No, said Adam. We need to deal with him so Christy can go back to Eugene and get on with her life.
Christy turned her wet blue eyes on my husband and said,
I've been thinking of moving back home.
The food I had just swallowed went down wrong and sent me off in a paroxysm of coughing. 3.
Well now, said Warren over the top of my coughing, Texas thick in his voice. I don't know about all that, Miss Christie. Where you live is up to you, but the sooner we get rid of the man who is scaring you, the safer you are going to be. So I'm going to ask you to tell me how you met him and everything you can remember about him.
Christie's eyes got bigger at the solid authority in his voice, and she looked as though she were 16 instead of the over 40 I was sure of.
Okay, she said.
He reached behind him and grabbed the notebook he tossed on the floor when we'd sat down and said,
Let's start with the first meeting. When and where?
A couple of months ago. Early February. I can check for the exact date. My girlfriends and I were out gambling, a weekend in Reno. We'd gone to a show and were finishing up the night with dinner in one of the casinos. There were a lot of people around, and since we do this once a month, there were even a lot of people we knew.
She played with her plate.
This man came up to our table. He was beautiful, younger than me, in a suit that... You know that blue-gray suit you had that was so expensive?
Adam nodded, and I found that I was jealous of her memory of seeing him in a suit, even though he wore suits a lot. But I'd never seen him in the blue-gray suit that she was talking about. She kept her eyes on my husband as she continued.
It reminded me of that, not in color, but in the way it was shaped. He looked expensive, but not in a kept man or I'm going to impress you kind of way. His eyes were bright, and he ignored the others, just looked at me. Tall, golden hair, swarthy skin, not the warm tones you usually see with South American Hispanics, more like Mediterranean dark. He was big.
How big?
She looked at Warren.
Taller than you, heavier, but all muscle, like a bodybuilder.
Her eyes strayed to Adam.
He must spend a lot of time in the gym, because the only other man I've seen quite that muscular is Adam. And when he looked at me, he saw me. Intense.
She looked down and pulled her hands away from her plate.
It was intoxicating, flattering, to be the focus of such power, especially at my age.
She smiled tightly, glanced at me, then away.
I'm not 18 anymore, and he didn't look a lot older than that.
She'd met Adam when she was 18. He'd been older than that, a werewolf already.
He introduced himself, Juan Flores, though he didn't have a Spanish or Mexican accent.
What kind of accent did he have?
Asked Warren. She jerked her attention back to him.
European, not French, Italian, or German. I didn't know it.
That's not a crime, said Mary Jo, because Christie had sounded like she thought she ought to have known.
Maybe it was a fake accent, said Christie. I've spent time in Europe, and I just couldn't pinpoint it. He had a little British crisp in his English, like he'd learned it in Great Britain. I thought that was why I couldn't pick it out. I didn't even ask before I hopped into bed with him. I am so stupid.
Don't blame the victim, I told her, with, I admit, a little of the irritation I was feeling. Not your fault you didn't recognize his accent. Not your fault he singled you out.
Adam told me that some of your friends knew him. That's why you felt safe with him, Warren said.
She nodded.
He'd done some business with Jackie, one of my friends. She's a financial officer at Nation First Bank, works their corporate and international accounts.
Her phone number?
She blinked and rattled it off. At Warren's urging, she also managed a better description of Juan. He coaxed her into remembering details about his habits of speech and dress, that he liked dogs, and had two hulking dogs that looked enough alike that they must have been a breed, though she didn't know what. He'd been impressed that she wasn't afraid of them. It was at that point that his desire for a little fun had changed to something more possessive. He'd insisted that she stay an extra day at his expense.
I was flattered at first, she told us. Who wouldn't be? A rich, beautiful younger man who appeared passionately attracted to me.
What changed? I asked.
I work,
she said a little defensively. She did, though Adam supported her. He paid the bills for her condo, her car, her insurance, and her phone bills. He told me once that he felt he owed it to her. I told him that was between the two of them and promised, hand over heart, that I'd never fuss about anything he felt necessary. She worked part-time at a travel agency that allowed her to travel more than she would otherwise have been able to. She put together tours and business meetings, and from what Jessie had told me, she was good at her job.
I had some extra vacation I could take, but I didn't want to use it all. When I told him that I had to go home, he was weird about it. Weird enough that I pretended to agree with him. And while he was in the shower, I left my suitcase, grabbed my purse, and ran. Took a taxi to the airport, where I rented a car and drove home to Eugene.
Did he just show up at your condo after that? Asked Adam.
No, she said. He started calling me. I answered the first one. I didn't know it was him. I said too much. But that was the only one of his calls I took until he changed his number. After that time, I only answered calls from people I knew.
I'll need the phone numbers he used, Warren said.
She nodded.
I have them on my phone. He sent emails, too. I read up on stalkers, and all the advice I found said that I shouldn't respond in any way at all. So I didn't.
She took a deep breath.
Then, the presents started to arrive. I order a lot of things online. The first one I thought was a misorder, a red silk scarf. I called the place that had sent it and found out that someone had purchased it in person and had it sent to me. They wouldn't give me the name.
They'll give it to me, said Warren. Do you still have the address?
She nodded.
On my laptop. I'll go get it.
She pushed away from the table and made an escape up the stairs. I looked at the stairway thoughtfully, then looked at Adam. I thought she'd be using the guest suite.
She was afraid to be on the ground floor, he said.
And I could tell by the way he said it that I wasn't going to be happy about which upstairs room she'd taken. Warren gave him a guy look, the one that said, I wouldn't be you in a million years, but good luck. She likes the peach room, I said. It was the bedroom next to ours.
Blue makes her sad, he told me.
The blue guest room was across the hall and next to Jesse's room. There was nothing to say that needed saying. I stood up, collecting as many dirty plates and silverware as I could. Adam touched my arm.
Mary Jo, he said, if you'll help Mercy clear the table, I'll grab the tablecloth and toss it in the laundry.
Mary Jo waited until we were in the kitchen loading the dishwasher to say anything to me.
It's not her fault, she said finally.
What's not her fault, I asked, that Christy attracted a stalker? Her face flushed.
That there's tension between her and Adam. They were a couple for a long time. She called to see if I'd come and defuse the situation so that you'd be more comfortable. She's trying.
I shut the dishwasher and started it. Yes, I said. She is trying. I didn't say what Christy was trying. I was pretty sure it wasn't what Mary Jo thought it was. Her eyes narrowed at me, so I guess my tone wasn't as neutral as I'd hoped. It's okay to like her, I told her gently. To worry and feel sorry for her, that's all just fine. I want her safe, too. I wiped my hands off on the back of my jeans and let my voice drop into a threat. Just be careful, Mary Jo. Be very careful. You've made mistakes before. Everyone makes mistakes. One you should not make is to imagine that Christy will ever be Adam's mate. He is mine, and unlike her, I don't throw away people who are mine. Mary Jo met my gaze, and I held hers, held it until she looked at the floor and tipped her chin, exposing her neck. Jesse had told me about her mother and Adam back when she'd been too young to know that people shouldn't share other people's pain, and I had been too involved to stop her. Her mother had told Adam he scared her, that the werewolf scared her, and that he smothered her. But I'd always thought that the real trouble between them had a lot to do with Adam's looking younger than she did, which made her attraction to a younger man something to keep in mind. I returned to the dining room and the interested faces of Adam and Warren. Both of them had heard the conversation between Mary Jo and me, but before they could say anything, Christy was back with her laptop. She sat next to Warren, and the two of them paged through her email. Adam's phone rang, and he glanced at the number.
I hired a man to watch over Christy's condo, he told us. This is he.
He put the phone to his ear and answered,
Hauptmann. It's Gavin, said a stranger's voice.
In the background, I could hear sirens.
There's a situation here.
Adam stiffened.
He's there? No, that is, maybe, but I haven't seen him. I've been watching your ex-wife's apartment building since about 2 this afternoon. I haven't seen anyone who matches his description, but her building is on fire. You might be hearing some sirens. The fire definitely started on her floor, and I'm pretty sure it was set in her condo. I happened to be looking up and saw a flash of color, flames in one of the windows of her place. I called it in myself, though downtown Eugene isn't exactly deserted this time of day, so I won't have been the only one. The fire department is fighting it, but it's going up fast. It's been...
There was a pause and a muffled swear word.
Sorry, pieces of it are falling, and I was a little too close. It's only been 10 minutes, and the whole place is in flames.
I glanced at Christy, who was watching Adam with a little frown that made me realize that she was the only one in the room who couldn't hear the other side of Adam's conversation.
You've told what you saw to the police?
Adam asked.
Gave my card to the fireman who's giving orders. Told him I'd seen something. He'll relay. I'm planning on cooperating fully with the authorities.
Of course.
Adam glanced at Christy, who had come to attention at the word police.
They already know that there is a problem. Make sure they make the connections, all right? They have my number, but it might not hurt to give it to them again.
They'll want to talk to her, too,
the investigator said. What's wrong? Christy asked. Adam held up a finger.
Of course. She's not answering her phone directly. They'll have to leave a message for her to call them back.
Right.
Adam ended the call and looked at Christy.
I think your stalker just burned down your condo, building and all.
She paled. Did they get everyone out? Adam shook his head.
It's a big building. There is no way that they could know that this early. They're still fighting it. They'll know more in a few hours, but it could be days before everyone is accounted for.
The War Committee continued to discuss Christy's stalker, with periodic interruptions from people calling with updates on Christy's home. Adam's investigator told us the whole building was a loss, and then gave Adam a few numbers of people involved in the investigation. Once he figured out that Adam was the famous Alpha Werewolf, the arson guy got almost chatty. He told Adam that they'd have to wait until the building cooled before anyone could be certain officially that the fire had been set. But unofficially, his gut instinct was that the fire was arson. The first police officer called shortly thereafter to ask pointed questions about insurance policies, which seemed to imply that the arson investigator had not only shared his unofficial gut instincts with the police too, but also told them that Adam was interested in the outcome. Courteously, Adam told the policeman that Christy had filed a report about a stalker who had assaulted her. And when Adam had recently contacted the Eugene police on the matter, he'd been told that Christy's stalker might also be involved in the death of a man she'd been dating. Adam gave him the phone number of the officer in charge of the Eugene police investigation without looking it up. The information seemed to mollify that police officer, but not the second one who called. None of the calls I'd made concerning Coyote had been returned, but Zach called around 10 and apologized for not showing up. He'd found a place to stay and also work, but the job had required him to start immediately. He'd come by as soon as he could.
I understand, Adam said, but I'd prefer to bring you into the pack as soon as possible for your safety. My wolves won't bother you, but there are other things running around town that might if you don't have pack protection.
I'm on call this week, Zach told Adam. I can't afford to turn down hours nohow. I don't know when I can come out.
Let's dispense with the formal ceremony, then, and do something quicker, Adam said. Where are you staying?
Almost reluctantly, Zach gave the name of a rent-by-the-week motel.
Okay, Adam said. My maid and I will be there in about half an hour. I'll call my second. The three of us will make it official. Meeting the pack can wait until you know your schedule.
This could all wait, Zach said.
No, Adam told him. I have no intention of letting you run around my city unprotected.
He hung up before Zach could argue further.
I'll keep an eye on everything here, boss, said Warren. You go welcome the new wolf to the fold.
Mary Jo, go home, Adam told her. You've helped a lot tonight, but you need to get some sleep before you go to work.
She gave Christy a worried look.
I won't chew on her, said Warren ironically. You go on shift tomorrow at 5 in the morning. Go home, Mary Jo.
I'll see you when you get off work, said Christy, managing to look like she wished Mary Jo would stay, while indicating just the opposite with her words. It was quite a feat. We can go get a manicure at that place we like in Richland.
It closed, Mary Jo told her.
I'm sure we can find another shop. Aurelie will know someplace good. Mary Jo grinned.
She will. Are you sure you'll be okay?
Mary Jo, Adam said. Go.
Left with no choice, Mary Jo preceded us out the door.
Are you sure she'll be safe with just Warren?
She looked back over her shoulder.
Don't be ridiculous,
said Adam with more patience than I'd credited him.
Her stalker set her apartment on fire tonight. There aren't any direct flights, and it's a 6-hour drive from Eugene to here. Even if he came directly to murder her in my home, guarded by one of the toughest wolves I know, Juan couldn't get here before I get back.
Adam opened the passenger door of his SUV for me, shut it, and got the driver's side door of Mary Jo's Jeep for her. She thanked him gravely, when she'd have given any other man the rough side of her tongue for his courtesy. Opening a woman's door was ingrained in Adam, but he was careful not to do it where one of her co-workers might see it. Apparently firemen, even if they were women, were supposed to be too independent to have doors open for them, and Mary Jo didn't want to get teased about it. Zach's motel was in East Pasco. The Tri-Cities doesn't have really dangerous neighborhoods, but East Pasco comes close. The motel was one of those old ones with little rooms that opened out onto the parking lot, the kind they don't build anymore because they aren't really safe. The big, shiny black SUV garnered the interest of a group of boys hanging out smoking at the edge of the parking lot. They were in that 14 to 16 age category when men are old enough to feel the testosterone and too young to have acquired common sense.
Hey, gringo, one of them said, you sure you want to park that there? Why don't you just leave that chica with us, gringo, because we know what to do with bitches like that. She don't need no white meat, because everybody knows white meat is bad for you.
Adam, who'd rounded the front of the car, kept walking until he was next to me. Then he turned his face a little up and out, letting the weak yellow illumination of the motel's parking lot lights hit his features full on. The boys had been advancing in a slow, semi-menacing manner, obviously ready to enjoy running off some poor couple in the wrong place at the wrong time. We'd had some real trouble with gangs in the Tri-Cities a few years back, but except for the serious drug traffickers who were too concerned with money and keeping a low profile to be harassing tourists for being in the wrong neighborhood, most of the gang activity had died down. One of the boys paused, squinted at my husband's face, and came to an abrupt halt.
Hey, man, he said in a completely different tone of voice. Hey, man, it's okay, right? We didn't mean nothing by it. Just having some fun, right, man? We don't want no trouble with you.
The rest of them paused, disconcerted by the about face.
It's the werewolf dude, he whispered loudly. From the TV, don't you idiots watch the news? You don't screw around with him.
The others turned to give Adam a closer look. Then they all melted away with fake nonchalance.
They make me feel old, Adam said mournfully once they were gone.
That's because you are old, I told him without sympathy. He'd enjoyed backing them down. Come on, old man, let's go bring our new wolf into the fold. Before we could, a sleek silver 67 Mustang pulled in next to the SUV, and Daryl got out. Daryl is big in daylight, but the night hides the intelligence in his face and the beauty of his features which can distract from his size. In the dark, he is huge, and right then he was carrying a tide of irritation that made him even scarier than usual. I thought of the impression Zach had given me in my garage and said, Hey, Daryl, if you could back down a bit, this guy isn't Peter, who might have been submissive but wasn't scared of anyone. This wolf is going to take one look at you and run. Daryl gave me a ticked-off look.
I'm not irritated with the new wolf. I'm irritated with you. You are causing me trouble, woman.
Daryl's voice sounded like it was coming from the bottom of a very deep barrel. It was the kind of voice I imagined a dragon might speak in, if there were dragons, which didn't exist, as far as I knew. I thought Daryl was mostly just grumpy, but Adam growled with intent that lent Daryl's declaration more seriousness. Daryl tipped his head away from me, but that didn't make him any happier. What did I do? I asked.
You upset Christy, and that upset Arielle, who doesn't think that leaving Christy's general well-being to Adam is the right thing to do, he snapped. I do not enjoy being put in the middle of this.
I upset Christy? I asked. When?
This afternoon. You insisted she sleep in the ground floor suite when she is a stalker after her. She's just a little bit of a thing.
Daryl, I said.
I don't know what you were thinking,
he said, forgetting Adam entirely.
Downstairs isn't safe. She's human and in danger from a stalker who, Arielle tells me, may have already killed a man.
Daryl, I said again, then quit waiting for him to give me space to speak and just took it. I admit I thought Christy would be more comfortable in the suite where she would have her own bathroom. The windows are alarmed, and there are werewolves, Daryl, in the house to hear when any stranger approaches, even on foot. I tried unsuccessfully to keep the exasperation from my voice. In any case, she's staying upstairs, and I didn't object in any size, shape, or form as I wasn't even home when she got there. I was at work. He stared down at me, and I met his gaze. He didn't look away, and I finally threw up my hands in exasperation. No, I am not thrilled by my husband's ex-wife moving into my house and sleeping in the bedroom next to me, but I am not making her unwelcome. I am not putting her in danger. And you know that I am not lying. Daryl inhaled, looked away.
Aw, damn,
he said, with less eloquence than a man with a PhD who worked in a government think tank should use.
She's doing it again. I'd almost forgotten.
I'm doing what again? I asked. I was starting to get mad, too.
It's Christy, Mercy, said Adam. Christy is doing it again. She has a way of making people worry about her. And that's the kindest way to put it, Daryl said, sounding poleaxed. You'd think I'd have seen it. I've had a lot of experience. I'll explain what happened to Arielle, and she'll realize that she misunderstood what Christy said. Just like the last 10 times she misunderstood. It will end up being my fault because I should have realized she misunderstood what Christy told her. My only excuse is that I've had years to forget, and Arielle is blind to the faults of people she loves. I am the most fortunate man in the world because I am the beneficiary of that blindness, but I forget that other people are beneficiaries too. Education and brains don't help when dealing with my ex-wife, Adam said, sounding amused of all things. You aren't wired to see through, Christy. And neither is Arielle. Now, let's go meet...
I don't know how long Zack had been standing outside his hotel room listening to us, but from the look on his face, it had been long enough. He saw me watching, and his face went blank. Zack, I said, let me introduce my husband, Adam Hauptman, and his second, Daryl Zhao. Gentlemen, this is Zack Drummond.
Hi,
he said warily. He still looked tired and too thin.
Come in, let's get this over with.
Enthusiasm was notable by its absence. Zack turned and walked through the open door of the motel room. Adam followed Zack, and Daryl gestured for me to go ahead. I stepped in and had to fight, not to gag. Maybe a human's nose wouldn't have picked up the odors in that motel room, or maybe it wouldn't have picked up all the odors. Maybe. But I didn't think even an asthma patient who hadn't smelled a scent in months could have stayed in that room for longer than 10 minutes without being nauseated. Cigar, cigarette, pipe, and every other substance anyone could smoke permeated the room, along with the smell of sex, urine, feces, and old alcohol. I've heard people complain that there is nothing worse than the smell of stale beer, but that room proved them wrong. Stale beer was the least unpleasant scent in the room. There was also mold, mildew, and mouse. All it needed was a skunk. Neither Adam nor Daryl showed any sign of distress. Zack looked at me and gave me a faint smile.
Beggars can't be choosers.
You can move in with us for a few weeks, I said. As it happens, we have a freshly cleaned bedroom suite that no one is using.
No, he said gently. I'm sorry, but I'd rather put up with this than... Your house don't sound like a safe place to be at the moment. I don't like pack politics. Them and me don't get along.
Daryl would have said something. Submissive wolves usually do fine in pack politics because, like Christy, no one wants to hurt them. But Adam made a subtle hand gesture that meant stop.
That's fine, said Adam. Welcome to the Tri-Cities, Zack Drummond. Usually we would throw a party to welcome you, and we will. But the constraints of your schedule means that cannot happen this week. We have vampires in this town and half-fae and a host of other denizens of the forgotten and hiding, many of which would love to find an unaffiliated werewolf to hunt.
I understand, said Zack when Adam stopped speaking.
Okay, My full name is Adam Alexander Hauptmann. What is yours?
Zachary Edwin Drummond.
Adam shut his eyes and took in three deep breaths. Under the circumstances in that room, it was a braver act than it usually was. Every time he breathed in, I could feel the pull of pack magic and felt it gather to his need. My mate opened his eyes and focused his full attention on Zach.
Look me in the eyes with no offense taken or meant, Zachary Edwin Drummond.
Zach raised his chin and met Adam's gaze.
I see you, Adam Alexander Hauptmann, Alpha of the Columbia Basin Pack.
Will you join with us to hunt, to fight, to live and run?
Under the moon, Zach said, I will hunt, fight, live and run with you and yours, who shall be mine.
We claim you,
Daryl said, and pulled out a pocket knife and opened it one-handed. We claim you, I said when Adam glanced at me.
I claim you, said Adam.
And he took Daryl's knife and cut a chunk of meat the size of the tip of my little finger off his forearm with practiced ease.
Alpha's flesh and blood you shall be.
He offered the bloody bit to Zach, who ate it off his fingers. Blood welled up from the wound on Adam's arm. Four fat drops fell to the carpet, and then the gouge scabbed over. In less than an hour, there would be no sign of the wound at all. A simple cut would have healed even faster.
From this day forward, Adam said, mine to me and mine. Pack.
Yours to you, mine to me, answered Zach.
The smoothness of his answer told me how often he'd done this. Magic sizzled and zipped between us, burning in my chest as if someone had set a match there. But I shared that power with the whole pack, who received Zach along with me. Zach got the whole of his end, and he cried out and wrapped his arms around his chest and sank down on the bedspread. It would have taken more than a jolt of pack magic to make me touch that bedspread. Daryl was made of sterner stuff. He sat down beside Zach and wrapped one of his long arms around the other man's shoulders.
Breathe through it, he advised. I know it burns like freaking nitrous, but it will be over before you know it.
Better joining than leaving, said Zach in a tight voice.
But the worst was over, and his muscles started to relax, until he noticed that Daryl was holding him. Daryl saw it too and released him immediately.
All done, he said, standing up. Now, said Adam, tell me about this job you have.
I'm washing dishes at a restaurant, he said. It's fine. I've done a lot of dishwashing jobs.
Under the table or over the table? Asked Adam.
Zach heaved an impatient sigh.
You're one of those, Alphas, he said in a long-suffering voice. It's safe. I'm legal and the job is legitimate. Not quite full-time, so I'll have to find another job to get out of this dump. But I can do that. I'm good at finding jobs. I need a pack, not a parent.
Mildly, Adam said,
It's my job to make sure all the members of my pack are safe and well-fed, so they don't get desperate.
I've been a werewolf a very long time, said Zach. 130 years, give or take a couple. I'm not going to go out and start eating children.
Good to know, Adam murmured. But you aren't sleeping here anyway. Who knows who will break in here and force you to defend yourself? The Marak has been very clear that he doesn't want any wolf put in that sort of situation if it can be helped.
He pulled out his phone and hit a button.
Hey, boss, said Warren in long-suffering tones. No killer stalkers or arsonists here yet, but I'm thinking that it might be a good idea to up the number of guards tomorrow, just to make sure Christy is safe.
Maybe Christy hadn't been complaining to Warren about how no one was taking her plight seriously. Maybe Warren really felt that they needed more werewolf guards to protect Christy from her stalker, who was, after all, only human. Maybe.
Agreed, Adam said easily. We'll keep four on guard duty until we catch the stalker. I have already set up shifts for tomorrow morning. After that, we'll have to do some scheduling. In other news, Zach, our new wolf, is in unacceptable accommodations. He is working not quite full-time and is probably willing to take on another job for an upgrade from the night owl. I stayed there for a couple of weeks, said Warren.
He wasn't lying, and he knew that Zach could overhear.
It seriously sucked. How about he come stay in one of our guest rooms? It wouldn't hurt my feelings to have another werewolf around when I can't be. Kyle just fired our yard crew and was making noises about getting the lawnmower out himself. If Zack wouldn't mind taking on the lawn, I reckon he could have room and board in return until such time as he wants to do something else. Make sure he knows that it's a big yard.
Adam tipped his head toward Zack and raised an eyebrow. Zack made an exasperated noise, but said,
"Okay, yes, okay."
I said, "Someone should let you know that Warren is third in the pack hierarchy. They should also tell you that he is gay and Kyle is his partner, and Kyle is human." Zack looked at me.
"Someone should tell him that for sure," Warren drawled. "I reckon someone should also let him know that Kyle and me aren't looking for a third, and the house is big enough that if he keeps his door closed, he shouldn't need to worry about what other folk get up to in their bedrooms."
"And Kyle is pretty snitty if he thinks that you disapprove," I added. "He'll do his best to embarrass you."
"I'll make sure Kyle knows how much you like him, Mercy," Warren assured me.
"He knows I love him," I told Warren. "But warning the werewolves who go to your house what the situation is so no one gets hurt has been my job from day one. An uncomfortable werewolf might take a bite that everyone would regret."
"As long as no one pees in the corners," said Zack with a wry look at the corner nearest the door. "It has to be better than this. And as long as everyone is above the age of consent and has enough sense to be able to give informed consent, I could care less what anyone does in their own space."
"Kyle and I are over the age of consent in all 50 states," said Warren,
then gave into full-out TV cowboy for the last bit.
"And I reckon I can refrain from peeing in corners, though I don't know if I can be responsible for anyone else."
Daryl was still feeling guilty for yelling at me because he volunteered to drive Zack over and introduce him to Kyle. When we got home, Warren was still getting information out of Christy. I wanted to go to bed, but if I did that, then Adam would be alone with Christy when Warren left. The minute I figured out that was why I was lingering, I yawned and kissed Adam on the side of his neck. "I've got to be up at oh dark 30, I told them. "I'm going to bed. If some pyro decides to arson my house again, make sure I'm up, would you?"
"I'll try my best," Adam said courteously.
And for just a moment, I had a flashback to Adam, burned horribly and frantic because he thought I was in my trailer. "I know," I told him, the thought of how badly he'd been hurt momentarily erasing my sleepiness.
"Mercy's a coyote. She'll be okay."
Warren winked at Adam. Then he said,
"Just make sure you grab the cat on your way out."
"What cat?" asked Christy. "I don't like cats." "Lock your bedroom, then," I told her. "She can open the doors. If she knows you don't like her, she'll try to follow you everywhere." I wiggled my fingers at Adam and trotted up the stairs with a little smile warming my heart. So I'd been spiteful, but the look on Christy's face had been worth it. Tomorrow, I vowed, I'd be a better person, but tonight I would enjoy my spite. Jesse's light was on. I almost just went to bed. I was seriously tired, and if I hit the hay right that moment, I'd get 5.5 hours of sleep. But I knocked lightly at the door. "Who is it?" Jesse asked. "Me," I said, and opened the door when she invited me in. Jesse was stretched out on her bed with school books scattered around and her headphones dangling around her neck. One of the earpieces was caught in the patch of purple hair just in front of her left ear. She didn't look up when I came in. "I'm just heading to bed," I told her. "You might consider going to sleep sometime before you have to get up, too." "Why did you let her do that to you?" Jesse asked tightly without looking at me. She wrote a few numbers down in the notebook in front of her. I shut the door and came farther into the room. I had to pick my path. My nose would have told me if there were any rotting food, but there was sure as heck everything else scattered all over the floor. My room used to look sort of like this before I moved in with Adam. Now I itched to pick up the dirty clothes and throw them in her clothes hamper, after I dumped out the eclectic collection of stuff already in it. "Do what to me?" I asked absently. She had a cricket bat sticking out the top of the hamper. Why a cricket bat? She didn't play cricket. Not as far as I knew, anyway. "Dinner was my fault," Jessie said, effectively jerking my attention back to her where it belonged. "She wanted to make BLTs, and I didn't see any harm in it until you came home and she was inviting people over,
deciding we'd eat in the dining room and giving orders left and right.
Dinner was good, I said. I've never had homemade mayonnaise before.
And your mother is welcome to invite whomever she wishes to dinner, especially if she is cooking.